What if the world ended and nobody told you? Kia ora, welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 233. Today is Monday, September 6, 2010. Over the weekend, Christchurch had a big earthquake, but the first I knew about it was when I turned on the computer about 11 a.m. And of course, by that time, a lot of my internet friends were already worried about me because I hadn't reported in. It had been many, many hours. So I'm going to talk about that first today, and then I've got a few updates here and there and some messages and comments, you know, the usual sorts of things. First, the headline part of that story, and that's that at 4:35 a.m. this past Saturday morning, a 7.1 earthquake struck about 30 kilometers from Christchurch at a depth of about 10 kilometers, which is pretty shallow and can cause quite a lot of damage. Christchurch City is a bit unusual among the larger cities because unlike, say, Auckland and Wellington, most of the 19th century and early 20th century buildings are still there. And as a result of that, there was substantial damage, especially with brick fronts and so on falling off the buildings. And it's because most of those hadn't been reinforced to meet new earthquake conditions. Now, in Wellington, and also in Auckland, most of the buildings that remain from the late 19th and early 20th centuries have been reinforced for earthquake resistance. And that is actually true as well for some of the significant buildings in Christchurch, like Christchurch Cathedral and some big Catholic church, I don't know what it's called, and some others. But a lot of these smaller, old commercial buildings were not reinforced. And that's where the problem actually came from. Now, it was a very big deal. But the fact is that no one was killed because of the earthquake, and there were only a couple of serious injuries. Now, of course, it's always a bad thing when anybody's injured. But the point here is that it could have been so much worse. If the earthquake had hit, say, during midday on a weekday when the streets were filled with traffic and the shops and cafes and office buildings were all filled with people, there would have probably been substantial loss of life, but certainly substantial injuries. So Christchurch was very lucky in that regard. And already they have probably about 80 or 90% of the water restored. They counted something like 300-odd breaks in water mains, in sewer mains or whatever they're called, and roughly a third of those are already repaired. So they're making really good progress to restoring essential services. Now, the repairs, obviously, is a whole other matter, and some of the estimates have been it'll be about 2 billion New Zealand dollars, which is something like 1.4 billion US, to repair all the damage. But we'll see. I mean, there's a good side and a bad side to everything that happens in this world. And the good side of that, of course, is its economic stimulus for the region and theoretically for the country as well. But, of course, we wouldn't want it under these circumstances. The earthquake happened along a fault that they didn't know about previously, which, I mean, how many times have you heard that story going on? But it was rather unexpected because when people have talked about the big one, they've always meant Wellington. Wellington has always been expected to be leveled by an earthquake one day. And so it was a bit of a surprise to have the earthquake be in Christchurch. Now, we knew nothing about any of this. We slept in Saturday morning and had breakfast, and I did some stuff around the house, and I didn't even turn on the computer until 11 a.m. And the first thing I saw when I turned on the computer, I checked my email first before I launched Twitter or any of that, I had an email there from the U.S. consulate. And I thought, oh, that's unusual. And I looked at it and said, it was forward. Earthquake in Christchurch, Saturday morning, 4 September 2010. Public announcement from the U.S. consulate. And that was actually the first way that I heard that there had been an earthquake in Christchurch. Now, on the right-hand side of my blog, down towards the bottom, there's a little widget that displays the recent earthquakes in New Zealand. It looks exactly as the same as the one that shows my recent podcast episodes. Because, well, it's basically the same RSS reader. But this particular one shows recent earthquakes. And when I looked at it, I saw that it said it was 4.6. And I thought, oh, that's no big deal. I didn't realize at the time that was one of the many aftershocks. So I went to the New Zealand Herald and saw the front page and saw that it actually been, well, at that point they thought it had been 7.4. But realized it was a very big deal and saw some of the photos of the damage. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this really is a big deal. And then I looked at my email again, and I received a couple of direct messages from folks on Twitter wanting to make sure we were okay. And so then I went and launched Twitter, and I replied to those direct messages and put sort of a general post up there. And it was really basic, but you've only got 140 characters. And I said, "Morning, everyone. I just turned on the computer. The earthquake was over 760 kilometers, or 470 U.S. miles, from us. So we're fine. Never knew it happened." And then in exchanges with others, I sort of elaborated on that a bit. But that wasn't, of course, the end of it. I thought, I've got to make sure that anybody who knows me from many of these various ways knows. So I did a little post to Buzz while I was checking my Gmail. And although I don't know how many people actually read Buzz updates, I did it all the same. Then I logged into Facebook and changed my Facebook update, my status or whatever you call it, so that people would know I was all right. And replied to some emails I got. And then later on, my sister rang. And then, of course, I did a blog post, as you do. And so I covered pretty much all of the bases. The only thing I didn't do is I didn't bother going to MySpace because I don't actually interact with anybody in MySpace anymore, and I haven't for a year and a half, 2 years. So that seemed kind of pointless, although I did think about it. I seriously considered it, and I also considered posting something to my podcast site saying, "Hey, we're fine." But by that point, I put out the story almost everywhere, and I kind of lost the momentum, I guess. But here's the thing about all of this. First of all, I only knew it happened because of the internet. And in a roundabout way, it was kind of Twitter that really got me going, because what got my attention was the email and the fact that I'd gotten a couple of direct messages about this as well. And then, of course, I filled in the details using the internet, and eventually we turned on the television and watched the live coverage on TVNZ. But it was an internet thing, and it was kind of – this has been a progression over time. When the very first earthquake I ever experienced in New Zealand, I don't even know if it made, probably didn't even make the news, and certainly nobody contacted me about it. The next one that was felt in Auckland, I still don't think was reported internationally, but I did blog about it. Then there was a very large one that happened in Fiordland, which is the sort of the southwest corner of the South Island, you know, the kind of the bottom left of New Zealand. And it was a huge one, but nobody lives there. And we certainly didn't feel it. And but I did get some Twitter messages and so on by that point. And I did a blog post to assure everyone that we were all right. And then, of course, this one where there was this flood of Twitter, this flood of Twitter messages and some emails and other things. And so that I sort of went all out to try to get all of that information posted. Now, this is kind of the flip side of an episode that I did 2 years ago, just over 2 years ago, which was called The Tyranny of Distance. And that episode was about how my sister and brother-in-law had been in a car accident, and it sort of highlighted the difficulty of living on the other side of the world when you can't get back to your friends or family elsewhere, in my case in Illinois, because it's too expensive and takes too much time and all those sorts of things. But in this case, it was the other way around, because something happened here and people were desperately trying to get a hold of me. Now, of course, the people who did, I can't think of any of them who have my phone number or even my cell phone number. No particular reason. They haven't needed it for one thing. So it wasn't like anybody could call and check or anything like that. And I began to think about the things like what happens in the event of an emergency, because it is inevitable that there will be a major natural disaster in Auckland one day. It's probably more likely to be a volcano than a earthquake, but you never know. It could be an earthquake. Or it may not. And I should add here that it may never happen in my lifetime. I may be long turned to dust before that ever happens. You just don't know, and that is exactly the point. And I began to think, well, what would be the recovery strategy, first of all? You know, because what about all this, all my data? Everything that I do is on a computer nowadays, and if something happened to that, I would lose it all. So that gets to the sort of, you know, online backup strategies that Daniel Brewer has frequently mentioned. And then I began to think, well, how would I let people know in a hurry? And if I don't have a computer or power, then I may not be able to post to Twitter or Facebook or what have you. How am I going to get the word out? Well, here's a little known thing about natural disasters. When a natural disaster hits, the problem with cell phone coverage is usually power more than anything else, because they don't have the wires to deal with so much. I mean, some of the towers may be damaged, but generally speaking, these days they're built to withstand a hell of a lot, and it's unlikely that they're going to fall over in an earthquake. So it comes down to power, and at first they'll have backup power to tide them over until the regular power starts going again. So you've got a little window of opportunity. But of course, everyone else is using their cell phones at the exact same time. So what do you do? The simple thing to do is you send a text message instead of a phone call, because a text message has a better chance of getting through than a cell phone call when the network is jammed. And this has been demonstrated time and time again here in New Zealand as well, not so much through natural disaster, but when there's been some sort of major event and there's a flood of people trying to, jamming the network. So if there was a natural disaster, I could actually send a tweet to Twitter through my cell phone as a text message. And chances are reasonably good that it would probably get through. And whether or not I would be able to connect, say, with using my laptop and the the USB stick modem thing, I don't know. You know, that would depend on a lot more than I could possibly guess about or speculate about. But my point is that it's theoretically possible, at least, that I could get a message to Twitter if nowhere else, which is kind of odd if you stop to think about it, because, well, first of all, time was when a natural disaster hits that you'd be incommunicado until you could make contact with authorities and maybe relay information to your friends and family overseas through Red Cross or something like that. And nowadays, I might be able to send a message through sending a text message to Twitter. And I imagine you might be able to do that with Facebook now, although I've never looked into it. Anyway, the point is that there are options now that there hadn't been before. And I began to think, you know, as I said, there used to be, in the old days, it was that you would register the Red Cross or somebody, or in my case, it could be the U.S. Embassy, so that they can relay information to friends and family overseas. But it seems to me that there is a path now, if you will, where people perhaps could register with an emergency service that would send a text message, or that would post a Twitter message or a Facebook update or what have you in the event of an emergency, and you could access it through something like the Red Cross, where instead of just putting your name down and going on a passive list that people have to go and check, that it would go the next step further. It would notify the people. It would sort of operationalize the emergency plan. So anyway, that's just something that occurred to me when I was mulling over my chair's squeaky. Mulling over disasters and what could happen and what might happen and all those sorts of things. And of course, as I said, it did strike me that it was the flip side of that episode I did 2 years ago, because here I was and people were concerned because I was so far away and they couldn't get in touch with me, and that includes my own family. And it's an interesting thing. But the fact that there are these new electronic ways of communicating does sort of change everything. And it's very fortunate that, certainly, as I said, that no one was hurt and there were very few injuries. And, of course, I'm also very glad that it wasn't us who was affected this time. And I hope that we never are, obviously. But it does give one pause. One must stop and think about such things, doesn't one? Now, I have some perfectly mundane life updates and so on for this point. First of all, I didn't podcast last week, obviously. Not because there was anything on or because I was too busy, but just because I just didn't get around to it. There's absolutely no reason for it. Now, we've recently had a change here, as I've mentioned before, I believe. Nigel leases his vehicle, and the lease was up, and the vehicle had to go back. So we took it back on Tuesday, I think it was. And that left us with one car for the first time in, I think, about 8 years or thereabouts, maybe 7 years. And, of course, I'm used to being able to go run errands during the day, even things for Nigel, like take his trousers up to the dry cleaner or what have you, go grocery shopping, anything like that. And now I have to plan more carefully. I've got to plan ahead. Now, I can do grocery shopping over the internet for a fee, and I actually may try that this week to try it, basically, to see how it is, see what it does, because I can. But a lot of things, you've got to sort of plan around them. Now, yesterday, Nigel wanted a screen protector thingy for his iPad. There's I've forgotten the name of the company, but it doesn't show finger marks. So he wanted to get one of those to replace the one he had, because if you looked at his iPad, it just looked shocking with smudges all over the place on the old protector. And while we were out, we stopped at the pet store where Jake came from, because they were having a big sale this week. And it was 20% off of all the premium pet food and so on. Oh, we can't beat 20% off. So I picked up some pet food for him and for Bella, even though she doesn't need any, and some treats and stuff that were on special. And it's the sort of thing that I would have been able to do on my own. Of course, in this case, that one's not as totally relevant because that was Saturday and Sunday only. But it's the kind of thing I typically do during the week where I go up and buy stuff for Jake or I go run errands of one sort or another, and I can't do that now. Last week, during the week, from Tuesday when we did the change of the cars until Saturday, I believe it was, I didn't leave the house, which is really weird. I can't tell you how weird that is. Now, it's not to say that I couldn't leave. I mean, obviously, it's not like there's a force field keeping me in or anything. But you'd have to understand the area where we live. It's very hilly, and things are not close to us. By car, we're only about maybe 20 minutes from central Auckland. But to get there any other way would take about an hour and a half, because I'd have to walk quite a way to a bus stop, take a bus that stops many places, and the bus alone takes over an hour, and to get to the bus stop would probably take the better part of another half hour. So all of these things aren't easy. The grocery store I go to would take me about an hour to get to if I walked, and maybe half an hour to 45 minutes if I managed to catch a bus. And there's a, we call it a dairy, it's like a convenience store, neighborhood superette, on our street down the other way, and I can get to there and back in probably half an hour or so. So if we run out of milk or eggs or even bread, I could probably do that. But it does mean I have to plan more. And it's like a whole other world. Now, fortunately, this only goes on for another 2 months and then it's back to normal. And a good thing, too, because I was thinking that I'd like to go and take some photos and some video around the area here and stuff. And then I got to thinking more about it and thought, I think I'll just wait until the car is back, because it is too far to try to go on foot, certainly. And even by bus, it would be quite an ordeal to get to any of these spots that I want to go to. But by then, the weather will be improving anyway. So, see, it'll all work out for the best. Now, over the weekend, of course, we also celebrated Nigel's birthday. His mom came up, and his brother and our nieces were up here as well. And as I would have predicted, they played the Wii. And I got, I think on Friday, I went and got one of those ever-ready chargers for the Wii remotes, which helps quite a lot because it replaces the traditional AA batteries with a battery pack and then a new back for the remotes, and it just goes in the charger and keeps them charged. So I don't have to buy any more AA batteries or even ordinary rechargeable batteries for it anymore. And, of course, that is all very good to me. And they enjoyed that. And they went back on Saturday, and Nigel's mom left on Monday, which was actually a bit of an issue because she left just a couple minutes, actually. I think it was before Nigel left for work. And all of a sudden, within like 5 minutes, everybody was gone. And it was just me and Jake and Bella in the house. And it just, after a busy weekend with a full house, just seemed kind of lonely. Well, it did. But things are back to normal now, and we are now in spring. Big Fatty has mentioned that a couple of times on his show, that the 1st of September is spring, or considered to be spring, in what we call Australia and New Zealand. And it's also true, however, that spring doesn't actually arrive by the generally accepted measure until September 23rd this year. Now, a lot of people, I presume, don't realize that the arrival of the equinoxes varies from year to year. And I'm not going to go into all the details about how you work out when it's going to be and so on, because I'd have to kind of understand it more than I really do. So instead, I just go to timeanddate.com and go and look up when the various, what do you call them, equinoxes. Is that the plural of equinox? Equinoxes? I don't know. Anyway, and solstices are. And I should also say that there's a little kind of interesting-ish sort of thing about that, and that is that the convention now has been to start to refer to the March equinox and September equinox, because the seasons are reversed in the two hemispheres, of course. So if people say the spring equinox, that in the northern hemisphere would mean March. But in the southern hemisphere, it means September. And similarly, if you talk about the autumnal equinox, in the southern hemisphere, that means March, and in the northern hemisphere, that means September. So it's just too damn confusing, because you've got to think, now, wait a minute, where's this person located that they're using this? And it's just simpler to say March equinox and September equinox and let people do their own conversions or whatever, because that is really what the issue is. Now, the spring equinox, as I said, is on September 23rd. It arrives at 3:09 p.m. on Thursday, September 23rd, New Zealand time, which is 3:09 a.m., September 23rd UTC, now you know. But that's the official, generally accepted beginning of spring in most of the world, or autumn in the northern hemisphere. But as I said, for us, it always has been September 1st and March 1st where we consider our seasons to have changed. And in reality, we probably would be better off waiting for the equinoxes, because like today, for instance, is really rainy and yucky, like a winter day, but it is much warmer than a winter day. It's currently about 18 degrees Celsius, which is, I don't know, whatever that is, Fahrenheit, which is a bit warmer than a typical winter day. It actually probably is a spring day, now that I think about it. So forget what I said. It should be spring now. Now, last week, my phone message line was nearing the end of its life, because as you may remember, it only lasts 30 days from the last call, 30 calendar days. And so I just put a plea on Twitter, and the plea was answered. And so I'm going to start with those messages. But I am going to start first with the last one that I received, because it's more relevant. It's relevant to the topic, the first topic of today.
Hey, Arthur, it's Phoenix Dave from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I just wanted to say how much I really enjoy your podcast, and I'm really glad to hear that you are going to keep continuing to do them. Also wanted to touch base with you and make sure that you were okay, and that I saw the earthquake information, and just wanted to make sure I know you're a good ways from the epicenter, but just wanted to touch base. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for that, and also for your concern. And I should have said before, thank you to everyone who expressed concern through whichever medium you chose. I sincerely do deeply appreciate that, and that anyone would be worried about what was going on with us. So thank you all for that very much. But I think this is yet another example of people using the technology or the media available to them to try to reach out and find out what's going on with their friends in other parts of the world when something like a natural disaster happens. And I just think that that is wonderful. Now, going back to the folks who answered the challenge, this was the first call I received.
Amaranth Boo, Amaranth Boo, I'm going to give you an Amaranth Boo. Hey, Arthur, this is Seder69 from the Twitter and the audio booth. I'm just calling to keep your phone line alive. Yep, that's me. Just staying alive. I was trying to think of the song, and that just went out of my head. Hey, that's it. You know, I really appreciate you. I love your show, and I thought you'd be a really cool guy to meet. Yeah. Look, I just got a little deep there, a little personal. Just because, well, you're good. You really are. And you make me feel stupid, I swear. Every time we do a group show with Honey, you're just brilliant, and you make me want to know more about my country. Anyway, so you have a great day or night or whatever the hell it is over there. Currently it's 4:30 in the morning here. I'm awake at my job because that's what I do. All right, that's been a minute 20 already. I don't want to take up too much of your time. So you have a great time, and I'll talk to you soon. Again, give me an audio what, boo?
Well, thank you very much, Seder. And Seder69 is sort of the king of audio boo, you could say. If you follow the tag Pride48, which is all smushed together, you'll get his audio boos, and some they're hilarious, they're funny, they're entertaining, they're informative, a little bit of everything. And I think he does more than anybody else, which is not a bad thing. It's just a fact. And he's also now the co-host of, what do you call it these days? My Honey Wears Plaid on shows during the week. And also Real Men Wear Pink with JT. Both, of course, are podcasts that I listen to. When I first got this message, I sort of smirked. I did when he said that about being smart and all that, because he always beats me on crank. which is a trivia game for the iPod/iPhone, and I think there might be an Android version. I don't know. You can play it on Facebook as well. And I've been playing that for a while, and he beats me every single day. Of course, that the very next day after I got the message, I beat him by one whole point. I did. And the next day I beat him by 10 points. But that was it. Ever since then, it's been back to normal where he beats me every single day. So talk about smart. Yeah, right. But thank you, Sater. And Sater is a lot of fun. He's supposed to be doing a podcast, but in the meantime, you can check him out at Real Men Wear Pink, My Honey Wears Plaid, and Audio Boo. And here is the next message I received.
Hello, New Zealand. You're on the line. Kevin in Danbury, long-time listener, first-time caller. Just want to call and, A, keep your phone line active, and, B, thank you for the wonderful podcast that you put out semi-regularly. Once a week, twice a week, however many times a week you decide to do it. Always find your podcast interesting and love to follow you on the first. Have a great day. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin and Danbury. And, of course, it is always fun to follow you and your partner on Twitter and also to play Words with Friends with you. And this is the second time I've been able to mention a game for iPod. iPod Touch, iPhone, iPad, and maybe other places, I don't know. And that's not intentional, it's just the way it worked out, you know? But if you have listened to My Honey Wears Plaid, the group show I was on last week, we are talking again. I actually think this made the cut. I didn't listen to that one yet, so I don't know, I may not have. And so this may come as news. But we are talking again, Honey and I are again talking about alternating Thursdays, where I'll do a live show one week, he'll do the next, and so on. Kind of like Nigel and Daniel Brewer do with their Third Colony show on QNation FM. And the idea behind that is that it makes it a little bit easier because you only have to do it one every other week. And if there's a time when you can't do it, you can arrange for the other person to take over and all those sorts of things. So we're looking at doing that. I just have a few little odds and ends I have to sort out. But I think we're probably going to go back to that. And so stay tuned for more information about that and the resumption of the live show. Now, if that does happen, that means that I will be doing two shows every week, just like before, and doing a studio show and a live show. And so that's one way of forcing me to do two shows a week, I suppose. But anyway, and now on to the next call.
Good morning. Have fun keeping your phone number. Have a nice day. Bye.
Now, that caller wasn't specified, but I would be willing to wager money that that's Matthew from Spanking B. Arthur and the Big Gay Sex Show, who, if I may say so, and I may because it's my show, is one of the sweetest, nicest people I have ever encountered in the podosphere. He is just a wonderful person, and so, and he's also great, he's also entertaining on Twitter when he deigns to tweet, which isn't often enough, but anyway. So if you get a chance to check out his podcasts, please do so. I do have links to Spanking B. Arthur for sure. I think I've got Big Gay Sex Show on in the links on my site. I don't remember. I'll have to look into that. And it's sort of a general announcement. Any podcasters out there, or bloggers too for that matter, if you're not listed in my links and you'd like to meet, let me know. It's certainly not for any particular reason that somebody is not included in those links. It's just that I either have forgotten to add it, or I haven't gotten around to it, or both. Probably one would lead to the other. So let me know, and I'll be happy to add you. There's no requirement, or no initiation ritual or anything, unless you want there to be. So that's that. Also, speaking of websites and things, I talked a little bit about how my upgrades to WordPress and PodPress had wreaked havoc on the Amrens podcast site. Well, it turns out it did that to Too Political as well, but that was the upgrade to PodPress specifically. What it happened is that for both sites, I've used PodPress to post my podcasts, and it stripped out all of my settings on PodPress. It took away the feed number for iTunes, so I couldn't ping iTunes anymore. But more worryingly, it took out the name of the creator or whatever it is of the, I think they call it author, of the podcast, which meant that it was substituting my email address instead of my name. So I had to fix that. I had to change the tag back to explicit so that I can swear with like a drunken sailor. And I had to do all of that sort of stuff over again, which really annoyed me for two reasons. First of all, I don't understand why, in order to make changes to the way it works, they had to strip out all of that information. And secondly, they could have told me that they were doing that instead of letting me find out quite by accident. And but on the upside, I've been relinking the old audio files to so that they're downloadable. Because the file, you may recall that the files were moved, rather than the way it keeps track of files was changed in the way that the site works now. And so I've got to relink all of these files. And I've gone all the way back, starting with December of 2009, all the way up to the current ones. They're all downloadable now, and I'll eventually keep going backwards. But I've also relinked all four video files. And three of them can actually be played on the site. I have absolutely, positively no idea why the fourth one won't play on the site. It just won't. But I also fixed the video player because it was showing the default image, which is this thing of Mighty Mouse in there. And I have my own image in there. That's like a title card that's supposed to be in the player. So I fixed that again. And so they're all downloadable, and three of them will play. The video four is actually on my YouTube channel if you just want to go there and have a look at it. It's really not worth it. Trust me, it's just not. The others are may or may not be interesting. That's entirely up to you. But now I'm going to go to the written comments over at amrinspodcast.com, which is more or less still working. And this is, of course, from my previous episode, 232 Surprises. And the first comment was from Roger Green, who said, "Because I know you care." And he provides a link. "Mandatory label information for beer, U.S. There shall be stated on the brand label, 1, brand name, 2, class, 3, name and address, except where branded or burned in the container, 4, net contents, except when blown, branded, or burned in the container, 5, alcohol content, for malt beverages that contain any alcohol derived from added flavors or added non-beverage ingredients other than hops extract containing alcohol." Well, there you go. And if you're absolutely right, Roger, of course I care. And I distinctly remember seeing malt liquor, as they called it, being advertised with its alcohol content right on the label. And there was, what were the brands? There was MD40, I think, was one of them, called Mad Dog. And there was another, Schlitz Malt Liquor. I remember that one. I actually remember, what the heck is his name? He was in one of the Star Wars movies. You're probably screaming at the screen at me. Anyway, he was advertising Schlitz Malt. I think it was Schlitz Malt Liquor. I don't remember. Somebody's, anyway. And, it's just always struck me as weird that they don't put the alcohol content on beer when they do on wine and spirits. It just, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. And the next comment was from Hat M, and it begins, "Thank you for the shout out. Maybe I should keep my comments shorter so that you don't waste half the rare podcast replying to me. But I appreciated you replying to the comment. Thanks." And the comment is long. So I am, with all apologies to Hat M, I'm going to skip over this one, which I don't usually do. Okay, he had a follow-up comment where he says, "Ouch, I didn't realize this would be so long. Sorry." And there's actually quite a lot of relevant stuff in there. And I don't disagree with him. But by all means, do go and have a look at what he has to say. He talks about, you know, flavors of foods and things and how we come to make the choices we make, all those kinds of things. And it's actually very interesting. But because it's long, I'm going to skip over it with all apologies. Oh, and do check out his podcast, The Angry Pantry. I forgot to put a link in the show notes last time, and I still haven't added him to the parade of podcasts, which I will certainly do soon. But in the meantime, I will definitely put it in the show notes this time, I think. And next up was Brother Sinatus, who said, "You are a city slicker. I grew up a little west of you, Montana, at about the same time, and I knew the difference between mutton and lamb. We ate mutton. Lamb was the expensive stuff sold in the stores. Of course, my dad helped slaughter the meats my family ate. To this day, I have to have a leg of lamb for at least one holiday during the year, usually spring equinox / Easter. It is usually New Zealand lamb. However, I am aware that many U.S.ers do not like lamb. There is just too much flavor. They really are brought up on flavorless foods and do not know what is good. a quality listener. And Brother Snatus, I will certainly vouch for that. And yeah, that's an interesting thing. And funny you should mention making lamb, because a year or two before I left the U.S., I think it might have been 2 years, I can't remember. Anyway, one of my ex-boyfriends wanted me to make him and his partner a lamb dinner. I think it was for his birthday, if I remember correctly. And I don't know why he wanted me to make that, but he did, and I did. I made a roast lamb dinner, which was quite good, thank you very much. But I also made mint sauce, which in New Zealand you can buy in a bottle like ketchup. And there are several different varieties. But I had to make it from scratch in Chicago. And I found a recipe to do that, and I did it. I presume it was all right. I don't use mint sauce myself, so I can't really say. But yeah, I made that as well. So, and then when I lived in the U.S., I also used to sometimes make roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. I must have been in training to live in New Zealand, I swear. And the final written comments were from Kyle Hawaii, who said, "Another great podcast. Loved the bit about expats costing New Zealand. Who thinks up these studies? You know, I have no idea. I have no idea why anybody would bother thinking about that, especially because the more I've thought about it since then, $14,000 is just absurd. I mean, it's just a silly number. When I was in university, I had a course in statistics, which is a word I still have trouble saying. And it was an introductory course, and it was part of the general education requirements that I needed and actually ended up being helpful. But one of the things they talked about were gee whiz statistics, which are numbers that sound really impressive and interesting until you realize they don't really mean anything. And I kind of suspect that that's what that falls into. But Kyle also left another comment that said, "Not too happy about not being able to listen to old archive beyond the Pride 48 one. Just kidding. I'm happy to wait. I want to listen to more. LOL." And thank you, Kyle. And as I said, I have now restored access all the way back to December, including December of 2009. And I'll be going and doing the others as well. I probably won't be getting any more this week because this is the busiest week of the month for me. But I wanted to be sure that I podcasted today for two reasons. First of all, because that gives me the opportunity to podcast again later this week, but also because it's been over a week since my last episode. And I wanted to make sure I got at least one in and as soon as possible. So there you go. That's what's going on behind the scenes. But that is it for today. And that is it for today. I was getting ahead of myself there. It's the end of the week already. It just feels like it. No, I should say that so far work is going very well, which is one of the reasons why I have time to do a podcast episode. But also, I just wanted to make sure that I did to reiterate for anyone who hasn't heard it already that we are, of course, safe and well, and Christchurch is making a remarkably good recovery, all things considered. They have a state of emergency that will last until Wednesday, and then they'll reevaluate after that. But central government will end up paying for a lot of the infrastructure repairs, and what happens to the other people? Well, that's a whole other issue, and that is a topic for another day. But thanks for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.